Hello and welcome to another Giving Circle interview. Here we're compiling information and interviews from people around the country who are running their own giving circles that we can learn from each other and improve our ability to make an impact with our giving. Today I'm speaking with Heather Yando of the Beehive Collective, and I'm really excited to have her here today. Heather, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So would you start with just giving us an overview of your giving circle?
Sure. So the Beehive Collective is about 5 years old. We are a group made up of primarily women who fund the projects we care about in Raleigh. We are kind of a combination of a traditional giving circle in that everyone in the giving circle contributes some money, and then collectively we figure out how to give it away. The other piece that we've added in, though, is that we like to throw parties in our community to raise funds. Mm-hmm. We were founded by a group of folks who have a history of doing that together, and we really love it. It's a great way to use our time and talent to build on our treasure so we can give away more each year.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of events have you had?
We have had a range of events. We are, 20 and 30-somethings living and working in downtown Raleigh, so we tend to have events that focus on that age group. Each year we throw the B-Ball, which is a fancy dress-up party that happens at a local bar, restaurant, music venue. We get folks to come and dress up. They vote for the royalty of the B-Ball. It's a way we make money aside from ticket sales. And it just ends up being a really fun night of community building. The last B-Ball we had, folks on stage were asked why they should be voted to be king or queen of the B-Ball, and most of them talked about wanting to do it because they wanted to make Raleigh a better place, which is perfect for us. Mm-hmm. We also throw a good bit of social events, just getting everyone together. We tend to like alliteration, so we've done biking with the bees, beers with the bees, bowling with the bees, those kind of things to find new members and get folks excited about the work.
Mm-hmm. And how do you find people to attend your events? Because I'm assuming that they're not just Beehive members.
They are not. We have about 40 Beehive members, and we have a whole lot of folks who are just Beehive fans. So we have a large email list, and then we also have a pretty good Facebook list. Facebook continues to change the rules for groups, so we're not always happy with the way they do it. But then we are really intentional when we plan events to make sure that we plan events that are going to attract a diverse crowd. When we do things like have royalty or have...
Sorry about that. Somehow my computer just went to sleep while in the middle of talking with you. So I missed the end of your answer there. So you have a large Facebook page, and you said you were saying that you're very intentional when you're planning events.
We are. We're very intentional when we plan events to think about the event and if it's going to attract a diverse crowd. We also often partner with people through the events. As I talked about before, getting royalty for our B-Ball, getting bands to play. And so we're conscious of the kind of folks that those partnerships are going to bring out. And we try to make sure we get a subset of the broader community.
Okay. So when you're trying to know a subset, would you still say that your primary audience are fellow 20 and 30-something people?
Yeah, I think that's definitely our primary audience. 20 and 30-somethings, we definitely now have members and friends who have young children, so we are finding that we're doing more events that are kid-friendly. We're trying to at least build in that aspect of some of our events. But we are primarily aiming at that audience.
Okay. Well, another thing that I noticed about your giving circles, you chose to have 0.5% of somebody's income as the requirement for a membership in the giving circle. Could you talk with me about your philosophy behind that?
Yeah. When we looked at giving circles that existed, kind of examples that we knew about when we started this 5 years ago, they were mostly designed around folks who were wealthier than we were. So of the five people who founded Beehive, four of us worked in nonprofits and one of us was married to someone who worked in a nonprofit. So we didn't have the ability to give $1,000 a year for 5 years, which was the starting gift well, one of the giving circles, one of the big women's giving circles in North Carolina. Mm. So we wanted to figure out a way to have a meaningful gift for folks, a thoughtful gift, but not something that was a barrier for people to join. Mm-hmm. So we started thinking about ourselves, you know, if we were making $30,000 a year, what's a significant gift? And does it change as your income changes? And so we started experimenting with the idea of having a percent of your income. 0.5% seems easy to calculate. It seems so at $30,000, that's a $150 gift. At $40,000, that's a $200 gift. So thoughtful, not a barrier for joining. You can still make contributions to other organizations as well throughout the year. But we thought people would definitely have a stake in the Beehive at that level.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we've done is we've said for folks who don't have an income, our students, our parents working from the home, $100 is the lowest level, because we really do want to have everybody have skin in the game mm-hmm. when it gets to the point of giving out the grants.
Mm-hmm. And have you found that people will increase their contribution as their income goes up, or do they set it and forget it?
They do. People increase as their income goes up. People give more than they need to give. All of the members typically are involved. Many of the members typically are involved on committees, are coming to our events. So they're giving at other times during the year. I think most folks are definitely giving above that 0.5%.
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting thing that I've seen recently is a guy named Eugene Cho and his organization, which I've forgotten the name of, but they ask people to give their income from one day a year, mm-hmm. which they've figured out is actually 0.4%. So we may have accidentally chosen a number that's really close to what you make in one day to give away.
And that would probably be one day's wages. Is that the organization?
Yes.
Yeah.
That could be exactly.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. And do you find, how do people respond or react to being asked to donate 0.5% of their income?
Most people think it's a reasonable ask. The only pushback we've gotten is from folks who really don't have an income or are students and going into debt.
Mm-hmm.
But people generally recognize that it is the giving circle model requires, in some ways, everyone putting into the pot that we give away.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a kind of debate about volunteer hours. Both would we require them to a financial contribution, or would we in place of a financial contribution?
Mm-hmm.
I think we liked that idea, the folks who founded it and subsequent board members, but the challenge of being without staff, without any support to run that kind of tracking, decided that it was beyond our capability, and that was a wise decision.
Yeah,
looking back on it.
So though it brings up a good question for me is that, you know, putting on these events is labor and time intensive. So people must be volunteering their time in some capacity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We definitely have a really strong core of volunteers. We have a set of volunteers who give their time, give significant time, but don't give their financial resources. They just love helping us throw parties. So we totally take that. To talk a little bit more about our volunteer structure, we have the board, the queen bees, as I've talked about before, and then we also have three committees that work through the year. The fundraising committee is primarily responsible for throwing those big events. We usually have two or three big events a year. The mission committee is responsible for helping us pick a theme at the beginning of every year and then learn about throughout the year. So they just finished planning a panel that we had a couple of weeks ago that focused on our theme this year of placemaking. And then we have a grants committee that helps to refine our requests for proposals every year, put those out. They do site visits. They vet the organizations. They present them to us at the end of the year, and we vote. So a lot of the work of the Beehive gets done in that committee structure.
One question, if I go back to the events for a second, when you put on these events, do you find that you get new members during these events, or are they primarily just a one-time fundraising thing?
That's a good question. We definitely get a lot of interest from these events. What we found over the years is that for folks to join the Beehive, and this may be true for other giving circles, they have to have some trust in that we're going to make good collective decisions with their money.
Mm-hmm.
And so people will come into the event and they will test us out a little bit. And then they may join over time.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the members we're finding through other members.
Mm.
We're not getting a whole lot of random people who stumble on the website and think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That happens every once in a while, but there's something about giving your money to a group of people you don't know and say, yes, let's all together make a decision about where this is going to go, that lends itself to having to have that personal connection.
Can you share with me a little bit more about your grant committee and how, is there any connection between your theme and where you might choose to donate your money? Do you try and focus on organizations that meet that theme?
Yes, absolutely. So we chose at the beginning of this process, when we started the Giving Circle, that we really wanted to fund in Raleigh, only in Raleigh, only organizations working on issues in Raleigh. They could be outside of Raleigh, but they'd have to focus here. We wanted to give impactful gifts. So instead of giving 10 grants of $1,000, we'd rather give one grant of $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we'll give, if everything goes as planned, one gift of $25,000.
Mm.
So we really want to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
We knew because the charity was kind of small, we needed to choose themes that were large. We also knew that our interests were going to change over time, and we wanted the Giving Circle's focus to be flexible. We weren't particularly interested in what was traditionally defined as women's issues, which often gets translated into choice children's issues, which mm-hmm. we're interested in, but we also have interests broader than just those very traditional issues. So we decided to make our theme change every year. So we choose a theme at the beginning of the year. We tend to have 3 to 5 options. We do some research on them, think about who in the community is doing work, what kinds of projects we could fund. We vote on that at the beginning of the year. And then absolutely, our grants go to that. We come up with some criteria based on the theme to evaluate each of the proposals. And then when we get together, we have become more sophisticated grant makers, and we ask tough questions about an organization's sustainability, about their impact, about how well they fit the theme. And we've made some really great grants over the past 4 years.
So how do you find out that information? Are you interviewing the organizations themselves?
We are.
Okay.
So we have a request for proposals that goes out that outlines our grant-making process. Folks send us a few page applications. Since a lot of us are nonprofit professionals, we really wanted to keep the application procedure small. So we do ask for a narrative. We ask for some budget information. Our grants committee has a whole, it is, I think, our largest committee. They have a set of folks who read those applications and score them. We, I think, pick out the top 10 applications to have site visits, where we actually go visit the offices, visit the program, talk to the staff. As I said, over the years, we've become more and more sophisticated. So the folks who are visiting now know the kinds of questions that the group is going to ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to know if we're going to be half your budget, how are you going to replace that money next year?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We want to know what other funding sources you have. We want to know what happens if you only raise half the money you thought you were going to, what happens to the program.
Mm-hmm.
And then part of that is we've learned by experience. We've had grants that didn't do what we thought they'd do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then they narrow that down to usually 3 to 5 that they present at our year-end meeting. And those presentations are actually really amazing. They present an overview of the organization, an overview of the project, some budget information, and pros and cons. The committee actually identifies for the rest of the group, the pros and cons of funding the proposal. And so we're able to have a pretty high-level discussion about the proposal based on all the good work that's been done.
Mm-hmm. And then everybody who is a member and contributing 0.5% of their income gets a vote.
That's correct.
Okay. Do they have to attend the meeting in order to vote?
No, we have a proxy ballot. You can vote in advance. We actually put up all of the materials online so if it can go and read them in advance. Mm-hmm. And we do instant runoff voting.
Can you say that again? What kind of runoff?
Instant runoff voting.
What does that mean?
So that means that we actually ask people to rank all of the proposals.
Okay.
So if your number one proposal doesn't get funded, you still get a vote. Your number two might get that. So we ask people to rank kind of 1 through 5 all of the proposals.
Oh, okay, interesting. Interesting. And why do you think that's important to do it that way?
Well, we want us to make sure everyone's vote gets cast, everyone's vote gets counted. And we know that sometimes it's really hard to choose between two mm-hmm. organizations, between two really worthy proposals.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of just saying you only get one vote, we say you can rank them. So if the one you ranked number one drops down, you may still get to push your number two choice to the top.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting.
And what we find is that people really get attached to these organizations and these proposals. So if folks do a site visit and they really like the organization, they really want them to win.
Mm-hmm.
They really want them to get the grant.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been a challenge in years past. We've had some people leave the meeting really disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not that the voting structure now changes that, but, you know, everyone gets a chance to really rank. It also gives us a better sense of how all the organizations played out. You know, if there's a cluster of three of them close to the top, or if there's one clear winner.
Mm-hmm. So how have you handled that, the dynamic in the group? Because some people will be disappointed. And then when you give a grant and it doesn't happen exactly how you thought, you know, some people might be disappointed. How do you find to get those people back and excited around, you know, being involved in the giving circle?
Well, we try to kind of constantly change our process to refine our process so that those things happen less.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the grant that we gave and the results didn't come in as the organization predicted, we now have a mid-year grants check-in. Because that organization knew 9 months before they ever told us that it wasn't going as planned.
Mm-hmm.
They had a major funder pull out.
Mm.
I think we were funding at like $10,000 or $15,000 and a $200,000 funder pulled out.
Oh.
So they knew within plenty of time. But they didn't necessarily understand the need to communicate with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not a regular grant maker with staff, so we weren't checking in with them.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have a mid-year check-in. And mm-hmm. that helps us get set our expectations at the right level, know early if problems are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Since we are a funder that likely in the future will only fund once, we're not an ongoing general support funder, we have a limited capacity to really hold folks accountable.
Mm-hmm.
We do have relationships with other funders, so in that sense, you know, if folks are being bad actors with our money, there is some accountability there. But for the most part, you know, you do a great job this year doesn't mean you're going to get a grant next year.
Right.
And that's, is that the way we've written it now? It means you can't get a grant next year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we try to just update the procedures, update the way we do things as we go.
Well, Heather, we're approaching the end of our time here. So before we wrap up, is there anything that you want to share about your giving circle now that I haven't asked you about or we haven't talked about yet?
I think one of the key things that we have really taken to heart that I encourage other folks to think about is we're doing this because it's fun and because we like it. So whenever we are meeting, when we're doing strategic planning, when we're having events, we want this to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets lost in a lot of these conversations sometimes. A lot of us do this for our jobs, and this is not our job.
Mm-hmm.
So we really want to focus on making it fun, making it really meaningful, having an impact. but doing it all in a way that was really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Great. Well, Heather, I want to thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your experience with us today.
Well, thank you.